Hi, and welcome to Being Lutheran, a podcast dedicated to proclaiming the excellencies of Jesus Christ and the biblical theology expressed in the Lutheran Confessions. Today, Pastor Jason Goodham, Pastor Brett Bowen, and Pastor Adam Mosier continue their discussion on the Schmalkald articles, looking at Part 3, Article 10, on ordination and vocation. Being Lutheran is sponsored by the Free Lutheran Bible College and Seminary in Plymouth, Minnesota. Whatever your vocation is, start here, go anywhere, grounded in God's Word.
Welcome to the Being Lutheran podcast. I am Pastor Brett Bowen. I'm joined by
Pastor Jason Goodham
and Pastor Adam Mosier.
All right, welcome back, guys. We are in our new but old studio.
We're in our summer house.
Summer house. Yeah, that's right.
The summer studio.
We had made the decision that we either had to buy a $500 quiet Dyson fan from Costco or move everything over into the other building so we could have air conditioning. Because when you get this much hot air going, in addition to an unventilated room, it's painful. Kind of like the people who listen to us feel.
Yeah, right.
I tell you, after surgery, not having moving air would kill me. So
yeah, I wish today we could have done a video podcast. Is that what they're called? I don't actually even know. But you should see Jason. He looks like, if you've seen the movie Forrest Gump, you know, when Forrest gets his braces and he's walking, kind of that's what Jason looks like now, thanks to his hip surgery. And I'm just waiting for him to run out the door and watch the brace fall apart, and you were just fast like the wind.
It's great news because I still have college eligibility left, so I could play for Alabama.
Yeah, as Forrest Gump did. I don't think you could play for here, Jason. You could play with your son next year.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
I would rather call the games.
Be a Ken Griffey Jr. and senior playing together.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
LeBron Bronny. Yeah.
There we go. Yeah, that's
sorry.
Right.
I interrupted you, Brett. Brett, you're going to want to go into the conference, aren't you? The Being Lutheran Conference.
I am. Yes, I would like to talk about that, and we want you to sign up for our Being Lutheran Conference. This is our first one that we're doing. It's August 10th, 2024, at the campus of the Free Lutheran Bible College and Seminary. And we're very excited for that. Out Loud is the theme, and so Being Lutheran Out Loud, with our special guest speakers Gretchen Ronovic and Flame, as well as the three of us guys.
Yeah, we're doing mini sessions on our vocations outside of podcasting. Mm-hmm. A little bit looking forward to the conference. Space is limited, so you're going to want to sign up.
It is.
Make sure we get it. Yeah, because we're confined to the chapel.
Did you say the date, Brett?
Yeah, yep.
August 10th. Say it again.
August 10th, 2024. So this summer. And you can register at our website, beinglutheran.com. And you'll see a 2024 conference at the top. There is where you can find more information and see the schedule for that day. And you can click to register. So, yeah.
Click to register.
Click to register, yes.
You know, is there anybody out there right now, Brett, who, you know, is signing up for things?
I see that hand over
they
there.
They don't recognize, what am I supposed to do? Oh, just click on. I think everybody says that, you know, like and subscribe. I mean, we all know what to do.
Like and subscribe.
We all know what to do now, but it's interesting. Yeah. I like how you said that, though. It's so professional.
Pick to click or click to pick.
Yes, that's a Hawk Harrelson-ism. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. That's right. Yeah, so it's $35 for the admission to the event, and then another $10 for dinner as well that day. Please sign up.
What do you get for that $35? Let's regale our listeners with the stories of what will happen in 2 months.
You'll get to hear our speakers throughout the day, and I think the other thing too that you don't always think about is when you come to a conference and you'll have opportunities in between times to talk to all the speakers, to talk to Gretchen, Flame, us. Everybody will want a signed copy of Jason Goodham photo, I think, maybe.
Are we going to have a printer?
There we go.
We're going to have a 3D printer printing replicates of my hip brace that I will sign.
Actually, by that time, you might be done.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to want that thing back, so we could auction it off.
There we go.
We could have a silent auction.
Yeah.
We should do that. Stay tuned for the potential silent auction items. And if you have an idea for a silent auction item, please let us know. Mm-hmm. Brett.bow. No, actually, no, I don't know what you're...
I don't have a website. Oh, I did a
that
lot.
Was an
many,
email.
Many years ago, I had a blog, but then it got hacked, I think. And,
oh. Yeah. Was your blog called Bow Knows?
No, but I did consider doing something like that.
Bow Knows Theology?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did say that in a sermon recently, and the people that knew smiled.
With a name like Osier, I can't have any fun, but you, I mean, you could spend days making, you know...
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway,
puns,
anyway, Jason Goodham, you know, that's also fun. My name is boring. Anyway, Brett,
no.
What are we doing today?
All right. Well, thanks for that. And we are jumping back into the small called articles. We're on 3.10, and the title is Ordination and Vocation.
Yes.
Yeah. So
yes. It's been a while since we had a good, vocation discussion on the pod.
Right. Yep. So... I think I'll go ahead and read that for us, and we can jump into our conversation here. So this is 3.10, small called articles. It says, if the bishops were true bishops and were concerned about the church and the gospel, they might be permitted for the sake of love and unity, but not of necessity, to ordain and confirm us and our preachers, provided this could be done without pretense, humbug, and unchristian ostentation. I love that humbug is just thrown in there.
It's my favorite.
Yes. All right, I'll continue. However, they neither are nor wish to be true bishops. They are temporal lords and princes who are unwilling to preach or teach or baptize or administer communion or discharge any office or work in the church. More than that, they expel, persecute, and condemn those who have been called to do these things. Yet the church must not be deprived of ministers on their account. Accordingly, as we are taught by the examples of the ancient churches and fathers, we shall and ought ourselves ordain suitable persons to this office. The papists have no right to forbid or prevent us, not even according to their own laws. For their laws state that those who are ordained by heretics shall also be regarded as ordained and remain so. St. Jerome, too, wrote concerning the church in Alexandria that it was originally governed without bishops by priests and preachers in common. And that's the entire article, Ordination and Vocation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised. I mean, this is just a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction, but, seeing the title Ordination and Vocation, it's not really, vocation isn't really mentioned necessarily explicitly here.
I think it goes back to that the bishops are not doing their vocations as bishop. I mean, the accusation from Luther is the bishops aren't being bishops. And that's the whole problem with the Roman Church in the first place. It's become a hierarchy of elitism, and what the people in the congregations are being neglected. Luther writes multiple times, especially at the beginning of each of his catechisms, the sorry state of spiritual affairs in the German churches, that the people aren't catechized, they can't even say the Lord's Prayer or any parts of the commandments or the creeds, and it's just because the bishops have been failing in their duties. They've been chasing after this kind of elitism and status, and during Luther's time, a bishop, or especially a cardinal, were among the most wealthy people in all of Europe.
Was it because of this that Luther was very particular in, for instance, his doctrine of the two kingdoms, right?
Yep.
Well, I say his, but I mean, it's the doctrine of the two kingdoms.
The biblical doctrine that Luther developed.
That Luther articulated in that way. But the idea that, it seems to me that this confusion of vocation is a misunderstanding of what the church was called to do. And I think that maybe is some of what he's arguing against here. And the Catholic Church at that time certainly was. And to this day, in some regions of the world, specifically, not least of which Vatican City, you still see kind of that hierarchical governmental influence. I just read, as we're recording this, maybe this week, last week, G7 summit, and Pope Francis addressed them. First time for a pope to ever do so. Not that the church can't give voice into world affairs by any means, and that I'm not saying was inappropriate by any means. I don't know what he said or what the point was of him being there, but that governmental influence of the church has really, and I think what Luther's saying here, really killed the idea of what the bishops or what the clergymen, what the church was to do. And the church is called to be the church. He talks about, you know, if they want to be true bishops, then they should do what they're called to do. They should confirm what I'm looking at the text here, but
ordain, preach, teach, baptize,
commune, perform any proper work or office of the church. I mean, that's what the leadership, the called leadership of the Church of God is supposed to do. And they weren't doing it.
Hmm. Yeah, and they were almost doing things directly to the contrary of that, or just, you know, failing in their duties altogether. I mean, there's so much we could tie historically to what this is saying, especially when you talk about, you know, like, well, the Roman Catholic Church gets original sin wrong, and so then they get the nature of faith wrong, and then they get the identity of who a Christian is and what a congregation is wrong, and so then by definition they get the role of a pastor, or in their case a priest, wrong, mm-hmm. and then by definition they get church government wrong. And, you know, it literally all goes down to justification, where this is where you see that if you get the chief article incorrect, the entire system breaks mm-hmm. down to the point that it's unrecognizable from what God intended in Scripture.
Yeah, getting that run leads all the other vocations to be, like, out of joint or out of not flowing from the proper way. Yeah. Interesting. I'm having a hard time not getting hung up on just bishops and thinking of that. Maybe this is a little bit of just coming from for the time we record this, coming off of our week of AFLC annual conference, and just thinking of pastors and that sort of thing. And we don't have bishops
not
necessarily.
One. I was going to say that there isn't one bishop there.
Right. Although when I was serving in the Dalton Free Lutheran Parish, it was a 3-point parish, you know, country churches, and a pastor called me the bishop of,
the parish.
Yeah, of the parish. And we just kind of laughed about that.
But. And there was a time in our church body's history, not too distant past, because I was a pastor, where each of our districts in the U.S., because we were trying to be able to reach all of our congregations, I think the president's office did appoint kind of district. What did he call them?
Like a district president, you mean?
They call it something less pretentious than that. It was something like district coordinator or like the pastoral coordinator or something. But immediately everybody said, "Oh, we're appointing bishops now," and that's what people thought. But in our church body, that phrase, as it was used historically, we have not had bishops, and in large part, I think, because of, you know, what we see at the end of the article where it talks about Saint Jerome and the church in Alexandria. You know, I mean, they were governing themselves as a, you know, congregations without bishops and priests, and, you know, like with all of that, kind of operating, I don't want to say from the bottom up, but more, you know, not that hierarchical top down that it can be, for sure.
Well, and I think maybe this is where we want to start saying that all church government mm-hmm. on its base level is not prescribed in Scripture. So, like, there's not a specific church polity that's laid out. There is some descriptive work done of what the early church did, but kind of the thing that we're all going on is that 1 Corinthians 14:40 mandate, let all things be done decently and in order. And in that respect, some form of church government is necessary just so that the church functions in the way it ought to as an organization.
Sure.
Yeah. And I don't think what Luther's arguing for here, and I got to be careful when I say this, because within our church body, the word bishop is almost a swear word.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That kind of hierarchy, which is why that, you know, the pastor that I referenced before said what he did. But the problem is I don't think there's anything wrong necessarily biblically with the office of bishop conducted rightly. And I think that Luther is not condemning the office so much as he's conducting the lack of following through in the vocation of that office.
Yeah, he's attacking the corruption of the office and not the office necessarily.
Right. And so, you know, in our context, you know, maybe you could think of it administration or somebody that served like in the AFLC, like a president. It's even though he's not necessarily a bishop, but you can have, it's like you guys are saying, the what's being attacked here is the attitude, and that's where we have that string of line, that line that's just lovely to say, without pretense, humbug, and unchristian ostentation. I just love how that's worded there.
Mine didn't have that, and I'm trying to remember what word. So looking at, I'm looking at the pulled version.
Yeah, different versions, yeah.
Yeah, of the Book of Concord, but I can't remember what it said. I'm wondering what the German word is there. Not that I know enough about German anyway, but it would be fun to know.
Whatever it is, it's terrifying.
But humbug, right. I like that. So, well, go with it. What does it mean, Brad?
Yeah, I guess, like it says here, you know, to ordain and confirm us and our preachers, without all of those things that we just listed, and so there's like a calling to, like you're saying, to do your vocation, to serve your neighbors in a certain way, and I think sometimes we need to remember too that, vocation, there can be some law mixed here, a law of failure to love your neighbor that can come through vocation. It's not, you know, when we talk about vocation, it's not always, you know, God at work through us, and that's true. But there are these times where you can fail in your vocation, and that's to be noted too. And so maybe we should get into this here, just the whole idea of ordination in general. And there's probably a whole string of historical things to consider here. Every church body, every church wrestles with how this should be.
So, and we have to go back to the Reformation to kind of state what's going on here. And I'm going to do this generically and not specifically because I'm not a church historian. But the big objection here is that one of the areas where the Roman Catholic Church really flipped out on the German churches is that the German churches started to ordain their own pastors. And that was for, you know, hundreds of years part of what the Vatican did, what the Pope did, is that hierarchical structure would be done in such a way. And Luther's like, no, we have a right to ordain our own pastors, one, because you guys are failing, and two, because we're the church. And so that's what's going on, and this is what ordination gets into, because it really is getting into the nature of the call. Who calls whom and to where? And in this case, Luther is saying our German churches do not recognize your Italian church as being an authority over us, so we are going to call and ordain our own pastors. Now, this is where we have to pause and look at where potential areas of disconnect and overlap would happen in modern society. And I think we would hesitate, like in the evangelical movement. What this is not saying is that anyone can be a pastor for whatever reason, no matter what. Luther and the Reformers took pastoral education very seriously. But they want it to be done in such a way that they were serving the gospel. And so you get this explanation from Luther that if your bishops were true bishops and were concerned about the church and the gospel, hey, we wouldn't have broken fellowship with you guys. But your bishops are concerned about earthly power. Your bishops are concerned about pretense and humbug and what's the other one?
Unchristian
ostentation. And they're failing in their duties. And so we need bishops in place. We need order and we need called clergy.
Right.
And so on the one hand, you fall off the horse into one ditch by saying pastors are utterly meaningless altogether and anyone can be a pastor as long as they're a head of a church. On the other hand, is they have to be done in a specific way by a specific group of people following specific rules. And Luther's middle ground on this, where Luther lived in the tension, is like, no, we have a church and we need pastors and we need people to order this church. And so we're going to do this apart from your help or your blessing.
Mm-hmm. So today, what does that look like now? And I think we kind of, just coming out of, we mentioned our conference, you know, there was some conversation at our conference about that. I think that there is some value in having some structure. And I shouldn't say there's some value. There's a lot of value in having some structure and order in how a pastor is called, right? Yep. I think there's a lot of people who think that they would be great pastors, but maybe aren't well-versed in the scriptures and haven't had the training for that. And maybe they don't have the temperament, or and therefore maybe, you know, God has not called them to such a thing. So we have to have, you know, some structures set in place. In our church body, we kind of, it's a little bit interesting, I think, and I don't know how much we want to get into this, but, you know, we have our seminary, which trains pastors. That's the role of the seminary. So give them that biblical and pastoral foundational training. And then we have a group called the Coordinating Committee, and they are responsible for rostering the pastors. And so they have their process of kind of the checks and balances, if you will, of did they receive the training? Are these men apt to teach and to preach and to administer the duties of the, you know, of the gospel? And then we have a colloquy committee as well that they go through, which typically, and I think in other, correct me if I'm wrong, Jason, you would know this maybe better than I do, but in other Lutheran church bodies, to colloquize into another church body is to receive pastors who've maybe been trained in a different tradition.
Yep.
In our church body, even our seminarians go through a meeting or a session where the colloquy committee kind of oversees. And when it's somebody coming from the outside, it's a little bit different process. But, you know, that's what it looks like for us. And I think all of those checks and balances are biblical. I think that there is this responsibility, I think, that those who are training and sending pastors have to congregations to tell them, you know, this is what we have done to train and prepare this person and to go through that. Because sometimes congregations are very good at that. And sometimes maybe congregations, that would be very difficult for them. And so there's a good thing to have that checks and balance. But none of that is spelled out directly in scriptures. This is how it has to be done. This is how our church body does it. And I know other church bodies of all kinds, but other Lutheran church bodies do it very differently. They have a different process. And I think, like you said before, Jason, that's adiaphora. That's okay, too.
Yep. And Missouri Synod has different rules for what ordination looks like and how they handle it with their synodical structure. And it's important to note, too, that we didn't just invent this out of thin air, because we're coming out of the historical context of the Norwegian State Church. And, you know, just by the founding of Augsburg College back in the late 1800s, it was seen by some in Norway as an act of rebellion against the state church. And I think our founders would find that the way the state church was behaving was very consistent with the way the Roman Catholic Church of the Reformation was behaving, and that there were, you know, bishops and pastors that were not living up to their responsibilities. And so, you know, I want to do a disclaimer now at the end of the episode,
yeah,
because this has been kind of dry and in the weeds.
Yeah.
This is all necessary setup for what we're going to be talking about in the next episode, which is the role of the pastor.
Yeah.
You know, we're not talking about the nature of ordination in this episode, mm-hmm, because Luther's article here isn't about the nature of ordination. It's about who gets to ordain and to what end.
Yeah.
And that opens up the door for what exactly does a pastor do? And that's what the next episode's on. And that's kind of more towards what our Bible studies are going to be oriented, yeah, to. So if you stuck with us that long, it's to be commendable. This was a little bit drier than most of our episodes, but it's like setting up the scaffolding,
yeah,
before you start painting. It just needed to happen.
Yep. Amen.
Thank you for joining us. Please look us up on the web at beinglutheran.com. Also, invite a friend to check us out on Spotify and iTunes. Are you going to be at the Being Lutheran Conference in August? The Free Lutheran Bible College and Seminary would invite you to come a few days early and attend our Summer Institute of Theology, which happens on August 5th through the 9th. Learn from faculty and guest speakers, including Dr. Harold Sinkbile, author of Care of Souls. To register for housing, meals, or elective classes, go to flbc.edu/SIT. God bless you and have a great week.